I just felt like I was, there's so much more to learn. Wasn't even thinking job yet. I was kind of wrestling with this. I remember I felt all this pressure, all this weight, like, what do I do? What am I supposed to do? And I remember I went in and met with a faculty member at TEDS, and I was just, he could probably tell I was a bit intense. I had all these questions, what about this? What about this? And he just said to me very calmly, leaned back in his chair. Yeah, he says, are you in a race? He's like, most likely you will be a student of God's word until the Lord takes you home. So you're not racing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pastor Theologians Show. Today on the podcast, we have Mickey Klink, who is a CPT fellow, and he's going to be talking to us about his journey, transition, if you will, from the academy to full-time ministry as a pastor in a local church. Really looking forward to the conversation, and we're going to get right into it.
Mickey, so good to have you on the show today, brother.
Good to be here.
And Zach and I are really looking forward to talking with you about your journey and your faith development and how you work out being a pastor theologian. So, but thank you so much for being a part of the show today. Why don't we start, Mickey, at the beginning, just after the earth cooled, when I'm kidding. Why don't we start with your faith journey? Give us a little context where you're born and reared, just so the folks are listening know a little bit about you. Where you're born and reared, your faith story. Did you grow up in a Christian home? How'd all that work out?
Yeah. Born and raised in Rockford, Illinois, northern Illinois, not too far from the Wisconsin border, in the same, almost same community where I'm ministering right now, which amazing. Is really cool.
That's amazing.
Parents got divorced when I was a wee little boy, less than a year old.
Okay.
So raised by a single mom. So big part of my own faith journey was the fatherhood of God. And I remember it clearly. I was up wow. at a winter camp retreat up at a camp called Timber Lee in southern Wisconsin
oh, yeah.
when I was a seventh grade boy with my church. I went to a free church, same denomination I'm part of now. And there was a youth pastor. Don't even remember his face or his name. I just remember his message. He spoke on the fatherhood of God. And I had literally come to this camp to throw snowballs and go
wow.
tobogganing. And he, at the first chapel that Friday night, addressed the fatherhood of God. And it was just like he was pouring
grabbed
into
you.
Me. Oh, totally. And all I remember is I said to one of the chaperones or youth pastor, could I run down and talk to him afterwards? I remember walking down the steps in this little chapel auditorium. And I don't even remember what we talked about. I just know we spent time talking, and it felt like in that moment, I first understood the gospel.
Wow.
I understood adoption and the biblical story and the work of God.
As a seven-year-old.
Seventh grade.
So that
was the first time where I felt like I grasped, had a beginning introduction yep. to the nature of the gospel for my own life and yep. felt like a transition in
but
my life.
But you're a regular church attender with your mom.
Very involved in church. I mean, kids,
your
kids
mom's faith was very real.
Absolutely. Lived with my grandmother. So I, in the Z, have described myself as like Timothy with Lois and Eunice, a mom
wow.
and a grandma. When I
wow.
when I first had kind of that confession, that like prayer that's often said, it was sitting between my mom and my grandma
wow. on,
in my grandma's bedroom when I was probably a seven-year-old,
amazing.
Six-year-old boy, seventh grade, that camp transition that helped me, and then just key individuals, specifically God providentially providing key men in my life. A football coach in college, got to play under a guy named Leslie Frazier, who played for the Bears in the Super Bowl,
yeah.
who invested in me as a young man. He even came to my high school when I was 17 years old, asked
wow.
me, and this is what he said. He took me and he talked about giving me a football scholarship to play at a small school called Trinity. I remember he took me out of math class, for which I was happy. And he took me on, this is back in the days with the VHS.
Out of math class is something glamorous, like scholarship at Trinity
yeah,
or playing football at Trinity.
Here's Leslie Frazier. He's sitting across the table from me in a small room in our little high school library. And he looks across the table and he says, I've talked to your mom. I know your story. I've got to ask a question. He goes, are you willing to learn what it means to be a man who follows Christ?
Wow.
That's the first thing he said to me.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there thinking this was like a football conversation, but it ended up being a bit more of a
mentoring, really.
Exactly. And so the Lord, without having a father in the home, provided key men at key stages
that's
that
amazing.
Invested in me in so many ways, for which I am very thankful.
That's amazing. And so finish your story out. So you did go to Trinity.
Went to Trinity, played football.
That is Trinity Undergrad College that the seminary is associated with.
It's the undergraduate part of the of the Trinity International University where TEDS, the Divinity School, is part of. And so played there, met my wife there, graduated from there, and just grew immensely. Key men at that school invested in me in significant ways, and I'm very thankful for that. And ultimately then sprang out of there into a ministry track about which we're talking about here today.
Yeah, tell us about, did you have a kind of discern your call to ministry in college,
you know,
at Trinity?
I remember,
or did you just want to teach the Bible and go to seminary? What happened?
I wasn't thinking academics at all. When I was younger, I was thinking church. I guess partly because I didn't know about academia. I didn't even know about that world.
Right.
When I went to undergrad, I actually majored in youth ministry. Yep. Here's why. Because I was a broken kid who had, his name was Jim Rosine. When he was a minister in our church who, prior to me graduating high school, invested in me. I mean, he without him, I don't know where I'd be. As a third grader, fourth grader, fifth grader, Jim Rosine was there. When I moved back to this area, he's the first person I took out to coffee. So he invested in me so much, helped me get through public school, just the whole reality without a dad. I was thinking that's what I was going to do because I went to a public high school and I just saw great experience, but I saw brokenness. Yeah. I saw brokenness in football locker rooms and in basketball locker rooms, and I was one of those sports guys, and I just saw that. And I'm like, all right, Lord.
Can I do something about this? Can I step into this?
Yeah. So I'm like, I guess I'll do youth ministry until I took my first hermeneutics class.
Okay.
And not that I didn't like youth ministry. Don't get me wrong. But
you loved hermeneutics.
I was like, this is amazing. I didn't even know this
was an
option.
And what was amazing about it? That probably sounds tedious to people.
Because God's word was so deep and so rich, and it was so multifaceted, and yet it was so personal. So it was like this full multi-dimensioned reality that I just had not thought of. And the moment I began to take classes to teach the Bible, I just felt this craving to learn it. And it just, to be honest with you, just never actually went away.
Yeah.
So by the time I was finished with college, I was double majoring. I kept youth ministry. I'd already gone through some, but I added biblical theological studies. But that's where my heart was. Like, by the time I'm finished college, I was not thinking about youth ministry. I was thinking, this is just prepping me for seminary. So is where it went.
And did you go straight from undergrad to seminary?
I did.
At TEDS?
Well, kind of. I made a little bit of a trip south to this city called Dallas.
Oh,
yeah. To Dallas
Seminary. I've heard
of Dallas. Yeah, Dallas Seminary. And it was a good experience.
But you didn't do THM at Dallas.
I did not. I was there for 2 years.
So it's too hot down here. I got to get out of this joint.
I was the only one. They didn't mind if I didn't wear a tie. In those days, you had to wear the sport coat and tie. And they're like, that's too much for me. But providence of God, I think he knew what I was doing. Like, I look back and like, I did not know what I was doing. I didn't have any kind of.
What were you doing, Mickey? Tell us what you're doing and then edit, like, then narrate or comment on it. What were you doing?
I'm going to go to seminary. I was super plugged in at Trinity.
Yep.
I felt like I needed space to study and not be, I mean, I was chapel, ministry.
Yeah, okay.
I had all these connections pulling on me locally. I'm like, I need space to study.
Yes.
And I went to Dallas and I studied. Part of the issue came is I realized I wasn't dispensational, which is a hitch.
But you had some exposure to that in your free church background, I assume.
Which was helpful, yeah. And I enjoyed Dallas. It has a very different feel than what I experienced at TEDS, but there were men and women there who invested in students. Yeah. And again, I think
great people.
In my where I was in my life, I needed that. God just knew. He just knew what I needed, even if I wasn't fully on and aware level of what was going on.
And how long did it take you as a seminary student to kind of figure yourself out theologically? I think that's a question a lot of seminary students have, or you know, they're in flux theologically and they're not sure when they're going to land on these things and how to make decisions about them.
And I'm a little interested, just kind of dovetailing off of that, more on the dispensational bit, because I think that's a fairly common experience. It was similar to my experience too, where you kind of grow up in a free church background, you're talking to your pastor and your parents about whether the rapture is before the tribulation or in the middle of the tribulation. Yes. And then you're exposed to the whole wide world. Like,
absolutely.
You think that's all there is.
Well, it's almost a lot of, in my tradition. So the free church congregational tradition can be systemless when it comes to theology.
Yeah,
like we are so biblicist, and I want to be thankful for
there's a lot of biblicism there,
but it's kind of a naive biblicism, right? Or it lacks a system that puts it all together. And so I think I was one of those. I was floating with a bunch of Bible verses, proof text, without a system. So I wouldn't have known the difference between Dallas Seminary and Westminster Theological Seminary.
Same.
If you'd say, I'll give you $3,000, I'll be like, city location? Like, I wouldn't have known.
Weather?
Weather, yeah. I just wouldn't have known. So I get to Dallas, and I begin to be immersed in a system. Then I'm like, oh, so there's a system that this school is promoting, and it's a biblical system,
yes.
But is this a system I feel the convictions of? And so for my first year, and I loved my time at Dallas, and I'm still connected with some of the professors that were there, but I would listen to their descriptions, and I was like, I am not convinced.
Yeah, you're not buying
But I didn't entirely. Trust myself. I'm
yes,
like, I'm like 22, 23 year old. Yeah, what am I doing? But is that right? And I remember talking to an older THM student there, and he's like, sounds like you're speaking almost somebody who's Reformed. And I'm like, what is that? I didn't even know what that was. And he said, yeah, it's Reformed theology. And he mentioned a guy named Bovink. And on a Friday night, I went into
the library and got a Bovink.
And they literally had to kick me out at like 1 a.m. because I was like, I've never heard this before.
Incredible.
And so,
where did you pick up Reformed-ish convictions that were in your head and heart so that when you got to Dallas, you're like, here's probably how I'd put that together.
I don't know. For me,
got them out of the atmosphere somehow.
Yeah, I was finding a dissonance with the way that they were packaging the reading of Scripture. I felt it wasn't satisfying.
Yep.
But I didn't have an alternative, nor did I fully trust myself, and I fully respected them. I also was fearful, to be honest, to necessarily pose a question or I certainly wasn't going to challenge, but I wasn't even sure what questions to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that was even in my view, again, looking back and not wanting to jump too far ahead, but seeing how in the providence of God, like God is able to orchestrate and be working in ways because he has helped me understand what basically the people to whom I am now ministering, the views that they have, the convictions that they hold, the way that they've read the Bible, the systemlessness of a lot of evangelical Christianity that I minister in, that's where they're at. And so even as I started my ministry in a local church 5 years ago, I began biblically based trying to present them with a system for thinking about the world and about God.
And you're kind of speaking broadly of like low church, high biblicist.
Bingo, yes, yes.
Like
absolutely, totally low church. Love the Bible, creed but the Bible, kind of those kind of things, which very good impulses, but they can lack a balance that actually is very, very important.
Was your dissonance with it while you were at Dallas, would you characterize it as hermeneutical or theological or both or primarily one or the other?
Yeah, I mean, then sometimes those just kind of blend together,
don't they,
right?
Absolutely.
I mean, but maybe where I first noticed it was at the hermeneutical level.
That's
like I was not finding it resonating with just what the plain sense of the text, right? I mean, these words we use, but it just didn't resonate with the plain sense of the text. It felt like it was missing something, but I couldn't find a fix. So I ended up, I mean, ultimately my time at Dallas, my second year there, my wife to be and I were already moving toward marriage. She had a connection because she's from Chicago area in college as well. We thought that'd be the best time to transition.
Oh, okay.
So married after 2 years and my last couple semesters at Dallas, I took language courses and things like that where there's a strength.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is a strength there and enjoyed my time very much. But it felt like it was time to go to Trinity, where there's still a bit of a, to be fair, in my read, doing an MDiv and THM there, there's a little bit of a systemlessness in that because it depends on the faculty you get. But the very first theology class I had was with a guy named Kevin Van Hooser.
Oh, yeah.
And I walk in and I sit in this class.
We've heard of that guy.
Yeah, I bet you have. And I'm sitting in this class and I was just like, I'd never heard this before.
Wow.
Like, it was just totally different.
Do you remember what class it was or what he was lecturing on?
I think it was Theology 2, whatever it was called, which, like, sin, salvation. I made probably different now.
A systematics course.
Yeah. And I, that was the first one that I took was that class. And I'd heard about this Van Hooser guy, and I'd wanted to take his courses.
But now my eyes had seen him.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I literally sat this big guy in the front row.
With a bib on.
That's right. And I was just, soaking it in. I was just soaking it in and was asking, what can I read? Help me with this. And I felt like my time at TED's Trinity was a time of developing a system.
Hey, everybody. Just a quick note about our annual conference here at the Center for Pastor Theologians. This year's topic is Techne, a Christian vision of technology, and we will be hosting this conference in Chicago on October 14th to 16th, 2019. We have a lot of great speakers lined up, including Andy Crouch, Pastor Charlie Dates, Karen Swallow Pryor, and a great lineup of pastors, scholars, academic theologians, and sociologists, as well as tech experts. It's going to be a great set of conversations, and I encourage you to go to our conference website, cptconference.com, to learn more and to register. Let's get right back to the conversation.
So you did the MDiv, and then you did a THM straight away right after that. And talk about what's going on in terms of your self-identity, your understanding of your calling and vocation, Mickey. What's going on inside of you? Thinking, I want to go be a pastor? Are you thinking, I want to be an academic? Or are you still unsure?
The biggest motivation for me was that I felt like I was there's so much more to learn. I wasn't even thinking job yet. I was kind of wrestling with this. I was serving in my local church. And I was thinking about PhD, and I remember I felt all this pressure, all this weight, like, what do I do? What am I supposed to do? Do I know another degree? Do I apply for the PhD program? I mean, I was looking to do something over in the UK, but I didn't even know where to start. I didn't know what to do. And I remember I went in and met with a faculty member at TED's, he could probably tell I was a bit intense. I had all these questions. What about this? What about this? And he just said to me very calmly, leaned back in his chair. Yeah. He says, are you in a race? And just the moment he said that, I just
that
felt
right?
my-
What a great question.
I felt my shoulders drop. He's like, so let's just get this straight. Most likely, you will be a student of God's word until the Lord takes you home. So you're not racing, right? You're not. And I just immediately relaxed. I mean, I bet we only met for 30 minutes, and but the first 2 minutes, I was already, bingo. I decided to stay on and do a THM because I was going to go do the UK PhD, and I thought just with languages and bib study and learning German and other things, that would be best.
Can I ask two questions, not to psychologize you, but maybe just a little bit, Mickey, which is... Have you always been fairly driven and restless as a person going all the way back? That would be the one question. And then the related is, have you always been curious, intellectually curious, and were you a good student in elementary school and junior high? Or was it something about the Christian faith and coming to faith in Christ that's been one of the things I've been interested in is I hear some people's stories where they didn't care anything about learning or study, and then they meet Jesus, and next thing you know, they become... These really
star students,
star students, earnest scholars. It's a fascinating thing to me. Talk to me about your deal
regarding the being a student. I do think it kicked in gear more when I was studying something like theology. The trick with me, at least as I look back, is I feel like in my younger years there was a lot of brokenness. There's a guy named Hutz Hertzberg.
Yeah,
he invested in me a lot when I was in college, and he was part of my wedding to my wife because he knew my father-in-law, et cetera. And he said to me at the wedding rehearsal dinner, he said, when I met you as a freshman at 18, I didn't think you were going to make it. He's like, you couldn't give me eye contact. He says, you looked broken. He says, and then to think that when you were a senior, you were my student chapel leader. He says, I would have never envisioned it. Wow. So I think at least for me, the academic part, whatever was there, as a younger man, a younger kid, there was a healing part to my own life.
Wow.
Again, connected to that fatherhood of God, my walk with Christ, the investment of key men, Nate Rivers, Dave Talley, Jim Rosine, Leslie Frazier, Mike Howard. Those were key individuals in my life that without them, right, as part of God's ministerial care, his shepherding of me. So in that sense, it's hard for me to tell. I have, though, that a bit of that drive, right, to go to all that schooling, to go to the PhD program. There's that drive in there that I think can be common in probably some of those who like that study, and it's there. And it has to be balanced.
Yeah.
It has to be balanced for health and honesty before God.
So there you are trying to figure out PhD, do a PhD, and obviously you decided to go ahead with it. That's right. Straight out of the THM program.
That's right.
No breaks. You didn't take any breaks. Zero. You didn't no circuitous routes, no internships. You just went.
I had an interesting offer. The church I was at, working at, the senior pastor came to me right as I was my last semester of THM. I think I had just turned in my master's thesis and passed it, and comps were done, and I was literally just kind of accepting to go to St. Andrews to study under Richard Baucom. And the senior pastor came to me and said, I'm going to offer you a full-time job right now. He's like, I don't know what it's going to be in a year, but for the first year, you will literally just be my assistant. This is a great opportunity for you to learn.
Marvelous.
And just learn.
Wow.
He says, full-time job, and then after that, I don't know what it'll be, but you'll be serving in the staff. And I'm thinking, I'm a little tired of school, right? I'm 27 at this point.
And this thing's going to have real salary and benefits.
I've got a wife.
Sold.
I've got a wife.
Seriously.
Who would like milk and a house. And so I remember in the providence of God, my mother and father-in-law were in town that weekend after he had talked to me. And we were kind of, my wife, Laura, and I were praying about this. And we're sitting there having pancake breakfast, which is a tradition in my wife's family.
All good things happen over
that's right.
Pancake breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Grandma Ruth's pancakes, literally. My wife's middle name is Ruth. And my father-in-law just looked across the table, pastor, EFCA pastor for many years. He looked across the table and he said to me, if you don't go now, you may never go. He's like, you're in the mode for it. Like, you're ready. You'll never be more prepared. You're
and
totally,
life's not going to get more.
You've got that intellectual conditioning for it right now. You've got no kids, and he said, "I wonder if you should go."
I suspect this is a word for some of the students that are listening.
It was hard. Yeah, it was hard to know. And my father-in-law would be one of those other men again who stepped into the gap, who mentored me. And so
at a key moment, just.
And even when I was in the seminary, when I decided to go to Dallas, I called him. When I decided to leave Dallas, I called my father-in-law. Like every step of the way, he was the one I would call. Kind of like, I even called him once when I was just dating his daughter. I said, "Would you mind if once in a while, I just called?"
That's great.
And asked. He says, "I'd be honored." So I mean, for me, when he's saying those kind of words to me, it's like a dad.
Yeah,
it's like a dad saying, "There's going to be churches. There's going to be jobs, but."
My advice to students when they ask about doing a PhD and where they are in life and all that, my advice has always been, and it's the advice I got from Scott Haifman, actually, which is as an undergrad at Wheaton, who was in a race when I'm sitting in his office saying, what should I do with my life? Kind of panicky. My advice has been get as much education as fast as you can. I mean, it's a little bit of that race mentality, but I mean, it is the idea of get it done. Your life is only going to get more complicated and the responsibilities, and why not lay the foundation now for a lifetime of ministry? Is that similar to what you would say to students?
I think so. I mean, our oldest child was born in Scotland, but he literally was born a week before I submitted. That made life very, very much easier. And I was in the mode, and my wife was we'd been married for 3 years. She'd gone through the TED stuff. She's like, let's do it. And for her, and this was part of it. I mean, this was part of the adventure.
Yeah, but a bit of the adventure.
If she wasn't behind this, if she did not want to move away from family for 3 years, but because she was like, this is adventure, let's do this. It made it
which
possible.
Maybe we should underscore that. Like the family, spousal, relational dynamics in making these decisions.
Huge key.
Because her parents, rather than saying, no, 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 don't you leave us, were like, you're serving the Lord. Like, wherever you need to go, whatever you need to do. And a wife who was like, this is part of ministry, even though there's a level of sacrifice to it.
That's great. So you identify Richard Bauckham in St. Andrews.
That's right. That's
the,
right.
And the world famous Richard Bauckham, New Testament scholar. Was it, did you identify him? You want to study with him? And he was at St. Andrews, or was it St. Andrews? Let me look through the six faculty there, and who should I study?
Yeah,
with?
How'd I had no clue other than I loved this gospel called John. And I'd done my master's thesis on it. And I was in a meeting with a guy named D.A. Carson, who was at TEDS when I was there. And he and I was just talking about further study. And he said, I'm going to give you number one. His name would be Richard Bauckham. That's where I'd suggest you go. And he was one of the people that wrote a reference for me to go study under him. And so I, after hearing that, I began a conversation with Richard. And he was kind of keen to my topic. And that's kind of how it all started.
That's awesome. And describe your experience at St. Andrews. We were students together in the UK at the same time, roughly, I think, basically. I was in Cambridge, you were in St. Andrews, and I was always a little bit envious of the dynamic up at St. Andrews. It just seemed like it was a marvelous community up there of students.
Yes,
and
I couldn't have expected
kind
it
of matchless,
to have been
prepared
really, for it. Lots of neat brothers and sisters with whom we got to study up there, and it was great. Yeah, I was saying for it. And mine was unique because I had no funding whatsoever. I mean, I had zero. We had some saved money, but I just didn't have any. So we went over there. In fact, to be honest with you, the story is a little shocking. Somebody had committed to give us money towards school and found out later that that was only as a way of motivating us to go. They were never intending to comply.
Get out of here.
No. So the story goes, we go over there and I contact this individual, and this individual says to me, you know what? I'm sorry. And I'm sitting over there. This is a true story. I'm sitting over there in St. Andrews with my wife.
Already on the east side of the Atlantic.
Oh, I mean, we are there. I've already started the first semester over there. This is in the fall of 2002.
Hey, where's the money?
And the person, you know, and almost kind of blew it off, like, oh, you'll be fine. And I hang up the phone. True story. I hung up the phone, and I was angry at God. My wife was sitting on the, I remember us sitting, she was sitting on the edge of the bed when I, because our phone was forever in the bedroom. In this play, and I hung up the phone, and I was angry. Mm. Like, I spoke about our Lord in ways that dishonor him and reflected where my heart was at. I just said, God, what are you thinking? Imagine, you know, I said those words, and my wife, literally tears in her eyes as she's listening to her husband talk. And 5 minutes after that phone call right at the end of my rant, the phone rang. I picked up the phone, and I had applied for a job to work in the residence life system over there. And I was told there is no chance. Like, there's no chance some outside American is going to come in and get this. But Isabel Clifford from the Res Life office called me and basically offered me a job 5 minutes after that phone call and right after my rant, which basically paid. I had free rent for 3 years. I had no utilities. I had no food costs.
Incredible.
Everything was covered. And I got to live in a dorm as a resident director. They call him warden, but it wasn't a prison. But I got to live in a dorm as a warden. And I got to minister to college students for 3 years.
Unreal.
I got to study all day long. And then in the evenings, I would work with RAs or meet with students, or organize socials. Students in my flat all 3 years. And the Lord basically waited for me for that first phone call so I could see my own heart.
Yes.
So I could just see a bit in whom do I trust.
Yeah.
And then he let me have the second phone call. He didn't switch the order.
And how generous he actually is.
Gracious.
Even in the face of.
Gracious. Perfect timing.
Amazing.
So that I could see him, but also I could see me.
And so you study the Gospel of John.
I studied the Gospel of John.
With Richard Bauckham.
That's right.
That probably was a great experience.
Wonderful, yeah.
He's a great supervisor.
He is. Our first meeting after we had read, he'd read some of my work. This is the question he asked me. Mr. Klink.
Mr. Klink, uh-oh.
Do you even know how to read?
No.
That's what he said. No. Now, what he was doing was challenging me to think critically, to engage with the material that I'm working with. So he wasn't meaning like I couldn't read. he just was concerned. He said, spoke about the idea. He said, sometimes in education, we can be taught to answer questions, he says, but a true student knows, a scholar even, knows what questions need to be asked. And so he was pushing me, and I'm thankful for
marvelous.
That.
Marvelous.
He encouraged me to think not just like a historian exegete, which is what I think I came in thinking like, but as a theologian. He couldn't believe I hadn't read. First thing he's wanted me, he didn't ask me to read the newest thing on John. He says, have you read Augustine? And I said, to be honest, I've only read about him. And he reached back without even looking.
Got his City of God off.
He'd start with Confessions.
Confessions.
Grabbed a book, handed it to me, and said, you start with
Let
this.
Your education begin.
And I said, I even said, I mean, imagine, the pushback. I'm like, I think I'm doing New Testament.
I got to get out of here in 3 years, man.
He said, yes. And he encouraged me to think theologically. And yes. Chris Seitz, Mark Elliott, Nathan McDonald, a bunch of other faculty, students at St. Andrews like Darian Lockett, Mark Ginellette at Darian at Tell, but Jonathan Payton at Southern, now Dan Gertner at Southern.
There's Steve a whole Mason, army of Maternal. You guys.
We learned together how to think and read the Bible theologically.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to part one of our conversation with Mickey Klink. Be sure to tune in to part two next week on the show. Thank you for listening to this episode of the CPT Podcast, a theology podcast for the church. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider throwing us a like, sharing the podcast online, subscribing, leaving a review. Anything like that would go a long way towards helping other people hear about the podcast. The CPT Podcast is a ministry of the Center for Pastor Theologians. You can learn more about the CPT by visiting us at pastortheologians.com. You can also find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our producer and editor was Trenton Jones. Our music was composed by Andrew Gerlicher. I'm Zach Wagner. Thanks for listening.